This is the worst podcast I've ever been on.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Vengeance. Vengeance is mine. Vengeance. Batista. And you for that.
But that's not fair.
Fair? Fair? Life is not fair. Life sucks, and then you die.
That was Vince McMahon starring in There Will Be Blood.
Do or die. Do or die.
We say all this before we've ever actually introduced the show. I was drinking coffee there for a second, and I was convinced you were going to make the noise. And I had this mental image of coffee shooting out of my nostrils. So thank you for not making the noise from the second video at that inopportune moment.
You do. He dies.
Did we ever figure out what the Did we ever figure out why that existed?
No. Which one? The Southern lawyer one or the
just the general concept of whatever was going on at that time? Was it during the year post the Trump loss at WrestleMania 23?
I think that's the best I can determine. It had to be sometime in the summer of 2007.
Because it also gave us now wait a minute though, because yeah, it would have had to have been 07, because that promo sets up the Edge Batista match where Edge beats Batista and then loses the title via cash into CM Punk on Raw the next night, right? Mm-hmm,
correct.
So this would have also been the same summer as the Matt Hardy get.
The same summer as Vince sitting in the rocking chair going back and forth.
For the entire episode of ECW.
Get.
By the way, this is the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast.
Ostensibly a comic book podcast. Ostensibly. Into a Vince McMahon videos podcast.
A Vince McMahon appreciation podcast. Yes.
The greatest character in the history of American television. And I say that only half joking, because I kind of believe it. Amazing character.
I hate Austin.
I hate Austin.
We should shoot a parody video this year of either you or I training one or the other for the Auburn game this year.
I hate Auburn.
Woo! We have lost.
Are going to burn the seven down Auburn's house. What's going to happen to him? Auburn's children will be kidnapped. Auburn's wives will be raped right in front of the Undertaker.
Oh, we've lost every listener we've ever had. You know that. In the last 3 years, have been wiped away in the span of 3.5 minutes.
Folks, if you haven't watched it, first of all, stop listening to the Hard Traveling Fanboys right now.
Yeah, don't listen to us. Go listen to this other video. Go watch this other video from which we will gain no monetary compensation.
Go watch.
Why not? We spend half the show plugging shit, which we don't get paid, so why not this?
Go and watch Vince McMahon directed by David Lynch on YouTube. It's a series of videos. You can thank us later. And you can thank us, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, by tweeting us at gphillips8652
and at NickDuke87. I mean, after all,
and folks, at JR's BBQ.
That's right. After all, folks, we are the longest running weekly
episodic comic book podcast
in all of Place to Be Nation. Lord Almighty, what are we even doing tonight, Nick? We've started with having fun. Endless...
God forbid the podcast.
I know. God forbid we just do things to have fun. We got to stay on point, Nick. And what is the point this month? What is the point this month? I can hear some people asking. What is the meaning of all of this? Well, believe it or not, there's no rhyme to our reason right now. But
well, there is.
There is a point to our show tonight because this is off the page.
Yes.
And what this is the kickoff of, gosh, Nick, what is this? 1, 2, 3, 4. The fourth annual Walking Dead Month at the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Can you believe it, Nick?
I can't. I can't believe it.
4 years now that we have celebrated October, appropriately enough, the month of Halloween, the month of scares, cheers, and cheers, chills and thrills, and cheers too, sure, and jeers. We celebrate this with a celebration of all things Walking Dead, whether it be the television show that brought us into the franchise, the comic books that introduced others, the video games, everything along the way that has Walking Dead plastered across it. And God knows there's no shortage of those things these days. Since we first started the show, Walking Dead has actually expanded its scope in terms of what all is included in the universe. So one of the things that we wanted to do is go off the beaten path, because we've talked a lot about the AMC show. We'll talk about it again in the future this month. But we wanted to go and look at a little show, the spinoff, your first spinoff of The Walking Dead, and it's titled Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. When this show first launched, Nick and I gave it a shot in the first season. We walked away largely unimpressed. My thoughts on it at the time.
You know, I wouldn't even go that far, because my memory of it is it was one of those things that I watched the first half of the season. You know, because they are adhering to that weird mid-season break that pretty much all shows do now that I hate, because I think it really does disrupt momentum for shows and people forget about it. You just kind of get out of the habit of watching, but that's neither here nor there. And I didn't dislike what I was seeing. I just never found the time to go back. It's not something I'm opposed to, or I should say it's not something I would have been opposed to, you know, maybe 3 years ago. Now, with my general feelings on the entire franchise, I'm pretty well done. So, but it wasn't, I didn't think it was bad.
I watched the whole first season, and I would classify it as something just there. Like, I wouldn't say it was bad either. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was somewhere in between. And it was,
I know, I remember in that first half of the season, it got a lot better once they introduced the, I don't even know his name, but he was the black character in the government jail facility, and he was awesome.
He was great. He was the reason that I actually lasted until the end of the first season. I thought he was outstanding. He was the best part of the show by far. The anchor on that show was that it was carried by a lead family of characters that were largely uninteresting. Madison and her family were just not that interesting. And when it came down to him, he was great. But we're not here to review anything from the first season. Nick and I agreed on this because we had already watched either all or portions of that season before. So we thought we would go and take a look at what is considered the jumping on point. We talk about this in comic books, Nick, where comics will have a jumping on point in long runs sometimes. Well, in this case, this jumping on point is episode 1 of season 4 of Fear the Walking Dead, which I didn't even realize they had that many seasons yet. But it was a jumping on point because it was the moving and shifting of one of the main characters from The Walking Dead, Lenny James' character, Morgan Jones, over to Fear the Walking Dead in an attempt to take some of the Walking Dead audience, to give Fear the Walking Dead a shot, and get them invested in a brand new storyline, a brand new cast of characters. So that's where we pick up in this episode. It is a season 4, episode 1 of Fear the Walking Dead. And kind of leading into this, I got to be honest with you, Nick. A lot of times The Walking Dead will bombard you with previously on footage, right? I could have used a little bit more on this one because I could not remember for the life of me the sequence of events that led Morgan to leave the central group on The Walking Dead. Did you have the same problem?
I vaguely remember it. I don't really remember the details. I know that there was a fight and it was positive Rick. So I assume it would have been after the Negan stuff, right?
I think it may have been the end of that Negan season. And Morgan may have just made the decision that he was leaving after that because of reasons. By the way, the name of this episode is What's Your Story? Directed by John Polson, written by Scott Gimple, Andrew Chambliss, and Ian Goldberg. And it premiered April 15th, 2018, to a 4.09 million viewership, a number which is among the most watched episodes of Fear the Walking Dead. Yeah, so Morgan has left the group on The Walking Dead. He's been one of the best, really, in my opinion, one of the best characters on The Walking Dead ever since he came along. And certainly, even in the comics, which we've been hypercritical of, Morgan has always been a good, strong character. So this is actually a point-of-view episode. Anyone that's ever watched The Walking Dead on AMC knows that they are very fond of POV episodes that are in the shoes of one character, whether it be Rick Grimes many times, whether it be Carl, whether it be Daryl, whether it be Carol, even Ezekiel, these characters have had these sort of perspectives episodes, and this is a Morgan perspective episode. It picks up with
This is indeed after the Negan conflict. I'm reading his Wikipedia right now. He has taken up residency in the home of the former trash people. After
your favorite after additions to the Walking Dead.
Oh my God! Anyway, continue.
Morgan's living with the trash people. He's living in their former home, this giant garbage constructed fort that he has around him, and he's living on his own because he doesn't want to be around people anymore. He's like a little bit like you, Nick. He just doesn't want to be around people for different reasons, though.
That's true. That's a fair point. I wish they would make a television show about me where I didn't want to be around people, then did want to be around people, then didn't want to be around people over and over again throughout the entire course of the show, because that's seemingly the only two character arcs they have in mind for either Carol or Morgan.
A fair point, Nick. I can't dispute that.
Been there, seen this, done that. Let's just start it off now. This is going to be not contentious, because I don't think you loved it or anything. Watching this reminded me of why I stopped watching The Walking Dead, because I was watching a Morgan storyline, a storyline involving a character that I care about that was recycled, that had already been done and done better, and it felt like we had moved past it. And I have no interest in watching them tread the same ground over and over with these characters. Find a new angle, find a new hook, find a new area of development. This is the same old shit. And so I was pretty much done with this, like, 10 minutes in.
Nick, you need to come back, Nick.
No. You say the first – no, you got to say the first line normally. Then you whisper the – then you reiterate what you just said shorter, and you whisper it.
Nick. You got to come back to the town. You have to come back.
You just do.
So
– you can hide. But you can't run. And then Morgan literally runs like 5 minutes later.
Morgan.
Shut up, Rick. What do you know?
Do or die. You do. He dies.
I die.
Oh, Lord. So,
right. Yeah. Don't die. I go on to star in my own theatrical film trilogy.
So, here's the thing. We pick it up in the trash dump area. And Morgan's living on his own because he's tired of being around people. He gets close to people, and then people die and he internalizes that. And in addition, he doesn't want to bring out the side of himself that is a cold-blooded killer that he knows is deep down in there. He doesn't want to hurt anybody. He wants to be a man of peace, if at all possible. Which again, as Nick pointed out, this is a complete flip-flop of his last character arc, which was a flip-flop of the character arc before that, which was a flip-flop of the character arc before that. He has literally oscillated between man of peace and man of war since the time we met him.
Yep.
But he has that in common with a lot of Walking Dead characters.
Well, yeah, that doesn't... Yeah, I don't think that justifies it. It's frustrating. It's equally frustrating for characters like Carol. It was frustrating for a character like Rick. Like, it's just... I'm not saying these characters have to never backslide or pick one standpoint and never waver from it, but find different areas to explore about these characters. Don't just explore the same dynamic and the same conflict over and over and over again. And Morgan, who is a great character, it feels like the writers by this point were just fresh out of ideas of exactly what the hell to do with him and just send him over to Fear the Walking Dead to help prop up the ratings on that show.
Right. Well, that's exactly what happened. Nonetheless, we pick up and he's in the dump, and we get these kind of artsy shots of Morgan being visited by members of the old crew. The first one to visit him is the character of Jesus. No, not Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus, the annoying Walking Dead character.
Yes.
He visits
sanctimonious ass Jesus, who reminds Morgan, you can try to hit me with that stick. You can try. Because it's not just enough for him to be sanctimonious. He also has to be haughty, a hand-to-hand fighting expert.
Yes.
Oh.
And so he tries to talk Morgan to come back to Hilltop, and the community they live in. And Morgan ignores him, as he should. Then the next person we meet is Carol. And this was one of the best parts of the episode. Because, you know why, Nick? Because Melissa McBride, who plays Carol, and Lenny James, who plays Morgan, are great actors. And in this scene, Morgan doesn't say a word, but acts with his face and his emotions and his body. Carol is talking and is she's amazing. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say she's, along with Daryl and Morgan, she's the best part of The Walking Dead. She's an amazing actress. Does a great job here. Unfortunately, she's not around very long. So she tries to talk Morgan into coming to the kingdom where she lives. He says no. And then comes the guy who I haven't seen in a calendar year on the show almost, who I don't miss at all on the show, by the way, Rick Grimes. Good old Rick Grimes comes here, Sheriff Rick, to be a completely oblivious jerk to his old pal Morgan, not listening to a word that Morgan says, not actually processing what Morgan's trying to tell him, and continuing to circle back to the same point. You need to come back. And maybe the best way to convince Morgan to come back isn't to tell him, you're going to come back anyway. You're going to need our help eventually, or we're going to need your help. You're going to let us in. Just come back. Just come back. Didn't like it, Nick. Didn't like it at all.
No, I didn't.
It reminded me of why I hated Rick Grimes by the end.
Yeah, I'm not someone who ever had the level of disdain for Rick that you did until near the end of my time with the show. But yeah, this one scene, again, reminded me of all the things that made me stop watching the show.
So then Morgan packs up his bags, and at first I'm thinking, oh, is Morgan walking back to the group and something's going to happen to him? But then no, Morgan stops and thinks about it and seemingly just realizes, as he should, fuck these people. And he turns around and goes the other way and just starts walking. And this is where the episode lost me for a little bit.
Oh, God.
So
I get what they were going for, but my Lord, it went on forever.
The Walking Dead, from its inception almost, and I want to be clear, I'm not trying to bury the franchise. I'm a huge Walking Dead fan from season one on, really. But the show sometimes, Nick, and I think you'll know what I'm talking about here, falls in love with itself. In terms of,
it can be a bit deliberately paced.
Yes, and it. I think they do this to be artistic, but as we both know, there's a fine line between artistic and pretentious.
I think they also did it to they wanted it to feel intentionally long, I think, in this case.
Yes.
Because I think they wanted to signify that he had gotten so far, from Virginia to Texas, I believe is what they said in the course of the show. And that's fine. But you could have just like said that in dialogue and not taken. I mean, it felt literally, Greg, like 10 minutes of screen time were just Morgan walking.
Yeah, you could have done a commercial break and then come back from the commercial and it picks up after he's traveled across the country. We didn't need to have long, lingering shots of him traversing the countryside between Virginia and Texas or wherever the hell he is. So that was really boring and artsy and pretentious, and I didn't like it. Then we meet which I found this out reading on Wikipedia. Apparently, Nick, all three of our main characters in this episode are new characters to Fear the Walking Dead. This was the introduction of both of these other two characters we'll talk about. The first of which is a man named John Dory. And I believe he actually has a cousin, Nick, John Terry. And John Dory and John Terry were a great tag team back in the territorial days. You understand that as well?
I believe, yes. I had been. Now, what about John Haas, though?
John Haas was a creation of Vince McMahon and New York. Not a real, genuine John brother. Anyway, Garrett Dillahunt, which is a great name. Garrett Dillahunt is the guy who plays John Dory. And when we first meet him, he is, and this is, I think, the first of where our review is going to diverge. When we first meet him, he is on his own in the wilderness in a truck. He's kind of a lonesome cowboy figure. He looks like he walked off the set of a Western, and which is why I'm kind
which
of
is,
soft on him.
From the I was about to say, which is why you love him, because he's a walking Western cliche.
Yeah, a kind-hearted, simpleton cowboy. Yep. And he's sitting there, and he's trying to eat him some beans, as you do. And he hears a noise, and he stands off, and he just starts talking to the distance, hoping that there's another human being there. He says he hasn't used his voice in almost a year.
I'm not entirely sure that there's another human being out there, and I haven't talked to anybody in over a year. But on the off chance there is somebody out there, let me tell you about the last time I got laid.
Yep, that's exactly what he does. And I fell in love with this character instantly. I thought he was great, man. He's interesting. It's an interesting gimmick. He's this extremely naive, extremely simple-minded, but good-hearted cowboy, and he's also a crackshot gunslinger, who can be a badass at times. But he's clearly got a heart of gold, unless he's hiding something sinister, which I think is possible. Given he's alluding to this woman that he was in love with, and for all we know, we're able to find out that, you know, it's a walker or something, you know. But no, he I fell in love with this character. So Morgan ends up coming to try and save him, and it creates them into conflict with one another. But then Morgan quickly trusts him. Not really trusts him. I don't think that's a bad word. Morgan comes to kind of check him out and make sure he's legit. And he quickly comes to the conclusion that John Dory is not a dangerous man. And so they end up, Morgan tries to go off on his own, and Dory kind of won't leave him alone. And
he wants to tell him more about how it was the last time he got laid.
Yeah.
Because as he says, if he talks about it, he'll see it in his head.
Yes. And I did.
I liked it.
It was good. So then they end up running afoul of these generic Walking Dead bad guys who are the same as any group of Walking Dead bad guys you've ever encountered. And they get picked up by Tank Girl.
Not Lori Petty, sadly.
No. It's a new character named
Althea.
Althea, whose nickname is Al. They just call her Al.
Right. Played by Maggie Grace of Taken fame.
That's who that was. I knew I recognized that actress. I never realized that was Maggie Grace. Yeah, she played Kidnapped Daughter in Taken.
Yes. I've forgotten her name. What was her name in those movies?
Kim. Kim Mills.
Kim, yeah. And then she was also on Lost in the early first season, maybe the first two seasons. She had a role on Lost
anyway,
as well.
She's good. I like her. She played Al. It's the Wikipedia summary describes her as a curious and tactical journalist who encounters Morgan and John. Which I'll get to in a second. So when she first appears, she's this giant badass, right? She rolls up in a freaking converted van that's been turned into a tank.
Now here's my question. This military vehicle that she has with machine guns, she's not even anywhere close to the machine guns, yet everybody just stops what they're doing. Are we under the impression she has some sort of like automatic firing system?
Yes.
She has added to this thing?
Apparently she pulls the lever and the thing just opens up and starts firing indiscriminately. And everybody's terrified of this machine. So she saves Morgan and John after they get bamboozled by these bad guys. And you know, they go off and quit. And at this point, I'm intrigued by her because she's mysterious and these bad guys feared her and she has this tank. Well, then the big reveal, she's a journalist who wants to record.
She's riding around doing the post-apocalyptic version of Sex, Lies, and Videotapes.
Yes, kidnapping people against their will and forcing them to tell her their stories for a video camera. So, I'm a journalist. I love journalism. Nothing wrong with that. You can tell those stories, but it was just
she should have been forcing them to write down their stories in a notepad that she could then transcribe and put into a printing press.
Exactly right. Exactly right. She should have been going around to the Walking Dead communities trying to sell ads to fund.
Yep. She should have been doing man on the street interviews.
Yeah. Tell me what your thoughts are about the zombie apocalypse.
What are your thoughts on gas prices?
Anyway, she's doing all this. I would be cool with a journalist character in The Walking Dead. I think that idea is okay. But here's where my disbelief could not be suspended, Nick, that a journalist would also be able to convert a van into a military-grade tank automatically firing.
To be fair, this is not a van. The vehicle she had was a military vehicle to start with.
Oh, really? I never picked that up, actually.
Yes. Yes. It's not a van. They kept calling it a van, and I was never really sure why, because it was clearly a military vehicle.
Anyway, she's converted
this. I believe in the parlance, we would have called it an MRAP back in the day, a mine-resistant armored something. I forgot what the P stands for, but anyway.
Look at Nick bringing actual information to the podcast. We haven't done that in ages.
Well, I had to make up for the extended Vince McMahon intro, I suppose.
Well, she...
And the burp into the
microphone. I have a hard time believing that she would have had the ability to convert this thing into what she's turned it into. With these
into a death machine,
yes,
with mounted machine guns and stuff.
And,
yeah, me too.
And be this massive badass and everything. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe that's my fault, and I should not have a problem because I wouldn't have had
That's us allowing our negative perceptions of broadcast journalism practitioners, many of whom we've known over the years, and doubting their mental acumen.
I will neither confirm nor deny your comments on that. I will say
you will especially not deny.
I will say that the other aspect is if this was in Superman, I'd have no problem with Lois Lane doing this. But I guess The Walking Dead is trying to have this level of realism in the zombie apocalypse that sometimes gets upended. Anyhow, they're death machines.
Yeah, which is why we have the pacifist monk with a stick and the soft-hearted gunfighter and the badass journalist all coming together because of the realism we're trying to display here.
Anyway, they get on their death machine and they ride on down the road until they run afoul of them bad guys again. And our badass journalist quickly gets the scoop thrown on her, if you will. She gets scooped, if you will. And they run afoul of these bad guys. They fight back and they come together.
And they win.
And they win. They realize that, by God, they've got a bond for each other now. You know, like Morgan doesn't want to be with any people, but he's kind of indebted to these folks. He knows he can trust them now, and he's ready to go off on his own. But he's got a bum leg. He gets shot in the leg, and by God, they end up going along together, and they're going to try to help John find his lost love until these three badass characters, including Morgan, who's literally seen and done it all, get bamboozled by a woman faking an injury in the middle of the road. And this, Nick, this was the problem with this episode for me, because overall, I actually really liked this episode. I thought it was entertaining for the most part. I thought the characters were engaging, these new characters, particularly John Dorian was engaging, and I thought Al was okay, and Morgan was great. And so I was actually compelled by this. I was like, I was kind of interested to see what these people do. And then they run afoul of the same group of characters that started Fear the Walking Dead that I had no interest in. One of which is now has a knife hand. And and here's the other problem with this scene, Nick. They come up on this girl in the street, and she's faking an injury, clearly. But they're not sure. They're going to go check it out, right? So Al says, all right, Morgan, you man this. And she points to the machine guns. And he goes, sorry, I don't kill. And then she goes, all right, what about you? And John says, I don't much like killing either, at least less I have to. And she goes, I wish you would have told me this ahead of time. So then she leaves the death machine. John leaves it. And then Morgan leaves it to go out and all check on this girl. Here's the problem, Nick. Why didn't she just stay behind and man the machine guns and let John or Morgan go out and check on the girl?
Because she, who knows? Because Walking Dead reasons, I don't know.
She's
man.
The leader.
I was fully checked out by this point, I must admit. So,
well, let's talk about that, Nick. Let's talk about the episode. What was it that caused you to check out in the episode?
The first 10 minutes and what I feel like is a disservice to the character of Morgan. Annoying preachy Jesus, bad Rick scenes, just all the cliches, all the things about that made me quit watching the regular, the normal, the mainstream, the OG Walking Dead. Characters who experience the same arcs over and over again, bad writing, slow pacing. I was done 15 minutes in.
Meanwhile, I thought the story arc of Morgan and John slowly becoming friends was a good one. I thought, John's just so tenacious and so dogged and so genuine that even Morgan, who's trying to close himself off from other people, can't really keep him out and can't stop himself from enjoying his company. And then go ahead, Nick.
I think the main difference between us is once I saw they were just going to rehash that ground with Morgan and they were sticking to that, I was done. And I think you were able to get over that. And me, I'm like, I've seen this done. I've seen it done better. I have no interest in seeing it again.
Right. And I can understand that to a degree for sure. I thought the stuff with Al was a little more forced, her relationship with the other two, but It was those three going on a road trip through the an area of the Walking Dead world that I haven't seen explored was interesting to me. But unfortunately, they lose me at the end by tying it in to these other people that I didn't give a damn about 4 years ago. This family that somehow is still around remember the drug addict kid from the first season that was unbearable?
Yep, I remember.
He's still around.
I remember all of them. Yep, that was him. His sister.
Yeah, the hot sister now has a knife hand. Which that might be interesting. I don't know. But it's just – I thought the episode had some good momentum, and I was actually enjoying it, and I was hoping that it would be, okay, these are the main characters now, and maybe these other characters will just be ancillary. But then what really killed me was this character of Al that got introduced as being this really smart, really intelligent, really intimidating figure – gets jumped not once but twice in the episode. She gets the bamboozled by the bad guys once they stop off for rest, and then she falls for the oldest trick in the book in the Walking Dead world, the fake injury, which has been done a million times on the show and in the books, and nearly gets killed as a result of it. Now she's being held hostage by these presumably the good guys of the show, and yet she's supposed to be this super smart I hate it when characters make elementary mistakes when they're supposed to be presented within the rules of this universe as beyond these elementary mistakes. You know what I'm saying? And that's the case. That's the case with this episode to me.
Yeah, I would agree. In addition to what I said, like I said earlier, just a mischaracterization of Morgan. Like, he was here and he was doing interesting things, but I feel like just the way he was behaving was just so forced and unnecessary.
Yeah. And there's a couple of times there's fight scenes in the episode, and sometimes they're good. There was one on the roof that was pretty good, I thought, with Morgan versus another guy, one of the bad guys. But
yeah, the bad guy who all of a sudden becomes an accomplished stick fighter.
Yes, grabs the stick.
Because you got to remember, in the context of the show, we've been taught that Morgan is essentially a Jedi, and yet here's this guy going toe to toe with him.
Yep, didn't like that. Even though it was a well put together scene, but then there's other scenes in the episode where I couldn't tell what was going on. There in the midway part of the episode, there's a big fight scene between this group of bad guys and the group of Morgan, Al, and John. And there's things happening in this scene that I could not make heads or tails out of because of the way it was edited together. Very choppy. Not a fan of that. So overall, I got to say, I liked the episode. I think that's where, I think Nick clearly didn't like the episode. I liked the episode, but was it enough to make me think I need to watch more of the show? No. What about you, Nick?
No, absolutely not. Didn't like the episode. Have no interest. I'm going to watch the season premiere of The Walking Dead for next week's episode, and then I will return to my preferred state of Walking Dead ignorance.
Very good. Well, what did you guys think of this Fear the Walking Dead Season 4, Episode 1? You can check it out on Hulu right now and let us know your thoughts on Twitter, gphillips8652 or nickduke87, or join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page over at Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook, appropriately enough. Let us hear what you have to say about this. And in the meantime, we're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we will have for you the exciting world of the news and notes in comics. It's a segment called The Rundown, and we're going to have it for you right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into the topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and HistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation listeners. We hope you listen to all those other great shows right here on Place to Be Nation and Place to Be Nation Wrestling. Right now, we are going to hit you up with the news and notes sweeping the world of comics and comics-related properties. It's a segment known, in North America anyway, as The Rundown. Boy, oh boy, Nick, lots of news this week. Lots of news, but let's lead off with a little bit of tooting of our own horn. I mean, we don't want to toot our own horn, but toot. That's right. Listen. Shocking news this week.
Oh, shocking.
All over the internet. All over the world, people are just jumping for joy because the startling announcement was made that Sony and Marvel have reached an agreement and will continue making Spider-Man movies together.
God, Greg, who could have seen this coming?
That's right. The powers that be at Disney and the powers that be at Sony put their minds together, reached an agreement, and by God, Nick, they're going to keep making money hand over fist.
What a shocking bit of news here. I mean, I don't know, Greg, after the failed negotiations were publicly leaked by one of the two companies, how could anyone have seen that as just a negotiating tactic? I mean, this is unheard of. This is unprecedented, Greg.
It's not like there was a series of trade publication articles leaked by each side respectively designed to make the other side look worse.
And it's not like one of those companies got exactly the desired public reaction they knew they would get.
And then subsequently got the deal that they wanted and that they were going to get. Because of a very successful public relations campaign. As one who works in the field of public relations, this was brilliantly executed, even if it was a little underhanded. It was brilliantly executed on the part of Disney. And Sony, I thought, did a fine job of trying to fight back, but it was just too late, right?
Well, it didn't matter. Listen. Right or wrong, like I'm not gonna defend the idea of it, but Marvel Studios, and by proxy, that means the Walt Disney Corporation, is seen by fans as the good guy right now because of the unprecedented creative and financial success they have had in running a shared superhero universe. No one else, literally, no other company has ever done it this well on film. No one. They're the only people who have ever done it. They have earned every ounce of fan goodwill. And at this point, Walt Disney has people – Disney as a corporation has people, millions of people who are willing to go out and wage online warfare to make sure that Disney was going to get exactly what it wanted in this scenario. Now, you can disagree with the very idea of that. You can have a problem with the idea that this giant corporation, this giant conglomerate – has not just all the financial leverage, but also all the public leverage as well.
And I do.
But those are just the facts.
Yeah,
I know you do. But there's no, you can't change it. Like there's nothing you can do about it. Sony, no matter what happened, even if Disney in real life had said, you know what, we're just going to do Spider-Man. We're going to pay for it all. We're going to take all the profits. You get nothing. And they had said that publicly, and Sony had walked away. People still would have seen Sony as the bad guy because they would have perceived Sony as not as being the ones who were not going to give them their MCU Spider-Man. It doesn't matter what the reality is, Greg. It matters what the perception is.
Yes.
And the perception of the online fan community is Disney good, everyone else bad.
I think it still would have mattered, though, from a PR standpoint, because I think that if Sony had beaten Disney to the punch, and had leaked out the report of how Disney was playing hardball in the negotiations and asking for things with the seemingly ignorant to the fact that Sony owned the rights to the character, that Marvel had legitimately sold them long ago, that things could have played out differently in the public eye. But Disney beat them to the punch. And once they did, when you combine that with the natural goodwill that Marvel Studios has right now, and people's willingness to turn a blind eye to a monopoly as long as it's good in the moment, then Disney was going to win, and they did. They did win here. And no, regardless of the terms of the agreement, whether it's what they originally asked for or not, there's conflicting reports on that. But regardless of that, Disney got what it wanted. They're going to keep making Spider-Man movies. They're going to get a bigger percentage of the profits. Now they're going to produce a bigger percentage as well. And
right, but Spider-Man,
yeah,
is a property much like all the other Marvel properties. It's going to make much more than it costs to produce. So
absolutely,
just I mean, any additional production costs that you're sinking into it are going to be easily and overwhelmingly offset by the additional share of revenue you're going to get.
Absolutely, no doubt here. For those wondering, the numbers is Disney will report reportedly financed 25% of the third Spider-Man movie, and will receive a 25% equity stake. And for comparison, Far From Home, the last Spider-Man movie, had a reported $160 million budget and a $1.13 billion box office gross.
Not to mention, Disney retains all 100% of merchandising revenue from the film.
Yep.
Toys, lunchboxes, T-shirts, you name it. If it's got Spider-Man 3 or whatever they're going to wind up calling it plastered on it, Sony does not see a red cent from that. Hate them if you must, but you have to. So, like, they played this city like a harp from hell.
Hey, you're mixing your companies now, Nick.
I'm saying
with a company
this was,
that has no ability to play a city like a harp from hell.
Underhanded, yes, and you know, a bit frustrating for people like yourself who do not welcome our new mouse-eared overlords. I can understand that, but you have to admit this was as expertly done.
Oh, yes.
A piece of corporate, PR tactics as you could possibly.
This was as excellently executed as a middle rope elbow from Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yes, whereas Sony's handling of it was more like a Lacey Evans sharpshooter.
Oh my God. When you make the Rock sharpshooter, I'm getting hot under the collar here, Nicholas. The sharpshooter is sacred. Sacred ground. Hey, what we're up, by the way, we'll get to that later.
So yeah, I'm at the end of the day, I know you probably shudder a bit at the prospect of Disney winning yet another of these public negotiations, but it gives us Spider-Man in the MCU where he belongs. And also, let me tell you about something I already see that I'm loving. A lot of these headlines that are saying one last collaboration between the studios, and then you read the text of the story, and it says, but future films could be agreed upon down the road.
No shit.
Guys, you are swallowing the bait already. They want you to believe in this brinksmanship, and it's working years in advance. Disney is already planting the idea in your head that, my God, this might be the last one. And if this is the last one, it's Sony's fault again. You're falling for it again.
I'll tell you what's going on here, Nick. This is just setting the stage for this exact media cycle that we've just been through is going to play out again in about 5 years or so. And
the next one will be longer than one film. I think this one, you know, the next one will be more of a longer term agreement. But like, this is, it really is a remarkable.
And I think the percent
piece of work
you're going to see the percentages go up next time. If this
absolutely,
because Marvel is going to float the idea that 25% isn't enough. Why isn't Marvel getting 50% of this? Why isn't Marvel getting 75% of this? In fact, Sony, why do you?
We're
even
doing
have
all
this
the
problem?
Creative work. We're the one, overseeing the shooting of the film. We have all the creative control. Sony's not really putting any work into this film. Why do they need to profit?
We should also mention, though, we haven't even talked about this other part of the deal. That in addition to getting one more Spider-Man movie out of this deal, they also get the ability of Peter Parker to appear in another MCU movie, an ensemble movie. Do we suspect that could be New Avengers, maybe?
I think that's a safe bet. As an outlier, I'll throw this one out there. What if the other one is the Doctor Strange movie, and that is how they explain away the secret identity bit?
To quote a great philosopher, whoa, kubba! And then the other aspect of this deal, Sony didn't get away with nothing, because there is another part of this. We did find out for sure that Spider-Man can now appear to some degree. We don't know what degree, but he can appear in the other Sony Spider-Verse movies. So that would entail movies such as Venom 2, presumably, right, Nick?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That would presumably.
Although, I don't really want him in Venom 2. Like, I want Venom 2 to be solely focused on Woody Harrelson and that wig. That's all I want Venom 2 to be about.
He could also.
I'm not joking in it, by the way. Like, I want, as cheesy as that post-credit scene for Venom was, I want them to take the cheese factor and multiply it times 10 in the actual film.
He could also appear in the rumored movie Silver and Black, I believe it is. He could also appear in Morbius, the Living Vampire. And you got to think, Nick, that he might even make an appearance in the rumored and planned Madam Web movie.
Oh, God.
That's right. Sony has got a new plan for their what are being called the Spider-Man adjacent films that can have sort of loose crossovers with the MCU now, allegedly. And one of them is a movie, a standalone movie, believe it or not,
being developed
called Madam Web. It is by Morbius screenwriters Matt Sazama and Burke Sharpless. What a name. For the Sony, quote, universe of Marvel characters. Not to be confused with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Originally created in 1980 by Denny O'Neill and John Romita Jr., Madam Web is an elderly clairvoyant woman who, due to a neuromuscular disease, is connected to a life support system that looks like a spider's web. Now, here's the problem I always had with Madam Web, Nick, on the cartoon. I only know her from the cartoon.
She's boring.
Well, there's that. But there's an issue in that Madam Web is supposed to be like really, really old. But she always looked younger than Aunt May in the comics.
I'll tell you what they're going to do. They're going to make her young and hot.
Yep.
That's what they'll do.
They're going to make Madam Web in name only, right?
Right. It should be like Betty White or that chick from the Harry Potter movies. Oh, God.
Well, the one I heard, actually, my boss had a great counter to that. And he said, what about Helen Mirren? And I said, you know what?
Helen Mirren
as Madam Web would actually make a lot of sense.
What's the name of the chick who was in the Harry Potter? She's been in other things, too. She's old and she's British. You know who I'm talking about.
I don't know the Harry Potter movies very well.
Yeah, but you know she's been in other things. Oh, what else has she been in?
You want me to just start talking about elderly actresses?
No, what's her name? Damn it, what else has she been in? She's on Downton Abbey, I think.
Downton Abbey. Is it Angela Lansbury?
No.
Is it Dame Judi Dench?
No, it's not Dame Judi Dench, although she would be good as well. Let's see here. Harry Potter cast. Maggie Smith.
I don't know who this is.
You'll know her once I tell you some other things she's been in. Dame Maggie Smith. She has been in numerous things, Greg. Numerous. Numerous things. She was in Sister Act. That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Sister Act?
Sister Act was a good movie, yeah.
Hook? You remember Hook?
Eh, not really.
I'm not asking if you...
I'm saying I'm not commenting on the quality. I'm sure Hook's a quality film. I don't remember the movie very well.
She was in both the best exotic Marigold Hotel and the second best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yeah, well, isn't it diminishing returns if once you get to the second best exotic Marigold Hotel? Like, you know, wouldn't you just spend the whole time wanting to go back to the best exotic Marigold Hotel?
She was in both of the Sister Act movies. Maggie Smith. You'd know her if you saw her.
Well, here's the... Here's the thing that I want to talk about. Where do the British get off calling women dames?
I don't. Well,
it's 2020, Nick. Almost.
It's not.
We're a couple months away from 2020, and they're up here calling people dames. Get with the times. This is not 1940s Los Angeles. We're not gangsters walking around saying "see" all the time. Are we?
I don't know.
Hey, William Hurt has joined the cast of the Black Widow film. He's going to be playing General Thunderbolt Ross. Not to be confused with 70s wrestler Thunderbolt Patterson, Nick.
No, this is good. This is cool. Glad to see it. It makes sense because this is going to be a follow-up chronologically to Civil War. You would have to have, I think, his involvement to some degree. To address Natasha's legal status.
Is he going to become the Red Hulk, Nick?
I hope not, Greg.
Well, Red Hulk.
The only alternate version of the Hulk we need in the MCU is that version from Secret Wars, Planet Hulk from a few years back. We need Hulk Hogan in the MCU is what we need.
Yeah, it's not that bad. What about Jay Leno Hulk? That would be good, wouldn't it?
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, you know, when I get angry, I turn green, eh? I don't know why my Jay Leno sounds like a, I don't even know, Mickey Mouse? I don't know what that was. Anyway, that's what he sounds like. As filming on Marvel Studios' first in-house television show begins for the Disney Plus streaming service, Variety reports that some observers in Hollywood believe, some might say that live-action Marvel productions could be, possibly, maybe, mostly, if not completely moved away from Jeff Loeb's Marvel television division.
Yes.
By God, Nick, what a great story this is. Tell us what this means. Unpack this for the audience.
I think what it means is you have to kind of package this with another story that came out this past week, which was the excerpts from Disney chairman Bob Iger's autobiography, which were released, that pretty much said that Iger had to directly overrule Marvel CEO Ike Perlmutter when he tried to stall both Captain Marvel and Black Panther in development. There have been numerous examples of conflict between Kevin Feige as the head of Marvel Studios and Ike Perlmutter as the head of Marvel Entertainment. And I think this is another step to just fully handing over live action adaptations to under the purview of Kevin Feige. And I think if this were to happen, the benefit would be nothing more like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We have to constantly wonder about its place in the cinematic universe. Either it will be or it won't be. And I think that would go a long way to clearing a lot of things up for fans.
Mm. Well, as with all things, time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that time will tell us about is the Crisis on Infinite Earths television crossover, Nick.
Yes. Seems like every week we have a slew of updates for this.
We do. We got word this week, and I'm not going to click individually on these articles, but we got word this week that Ryan Choi is coming to the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover event. Now, this is a character who was the replacement version of the Atom. Ray Palmer, who we all know as the Atom, was replaced in the comic books by Ryan Choi. I believe he was introduced in the 52 crossover, or at least around that time. And he becomes the Atom and is a very successful version of that character. Supernatural alum Osric Chow has been cast as Ryan Choi. And the character is described as a physics professor at Ivytown University, a normal guy who learns that he has a pivotal role to play in the upcoming Crisis on Infinite Earths. So they haven't officially announced that he's going to be the Atom, just that he's going to be Ryan Choi, and they have swerved us in the past with certain characters like Jason.
But Rush. We also know, based on reports, that Ray Palmer as the Atom is leaving Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah,
so
heading out. This seems to be
a case of putting two and two together.
Then we hit the most unexpected Crisis on Infinite Earth story yet.
Unexpected, and I love this, but I love it. This is outstanding.
Talk about thinking outside of the box.
Yes.
Ashley Scott, a name that I don't think will probably mean much to many of our listeners. She played the Huntress in 2002's short-lived Birds of Prey television series. Well, she's coming back to the DC Universe, and she is going to be reprising her role as the Huntress in Crisis on Infinite Earths. It is the latest in a string of return, and this is reaching into a very niche show that is only available, I believe, on DC Universe to watch. She is going to be coming in here to play this character that this version of the Huntress that is clearly not the Arrowverse version of the Huntress. So, yeah, I agree with you, Nick. This is awesome. This is an unexpected blast.
This is what Crisis should be. Like, pulling in every corner of DC television wherever possible. In addition, I mean, we've already got Tom Welling, Erica Durance, Burt Ward, you know, various other, you know, incarnations of characters from across DC television properties. This is just outstanding.
Outstanding is exactly the word to describe the last item we're going to talk about related to the crisis this week.
Yeah, this is mostly for you here.
We have gotten our first images, several images, in fact, of Brandon Routh in full costume as the Kingdom Come Superman. And, folks, this is dynamite. I would go so far as to say, and this is hyperbolic right now, I can't completely stand by this until I've seen the suit in action and I've seen the entirety of the suit. But upper torso and what we've seen in the costume so far, this is my favorite live screen Superman costume to date.
Really? You like the black better than the blue and the yellow?
No, let me explain. If they had taken this costume and just put the blue and yellow, the classic yellow and red shield on the chest,
mm-hmm.
it would be perfect. As it is not that version of Superman. As you know, Kingdom Come Superman has that black logo on his chest.
Right. I know.
So for that version of the character, they literally could not have done a better job of putting this whole thing together. I was blown away when I saw this image. It just screams Superman. Brandon Routh looks like Superman. The colors on this suit are what really stand out to me, Nick, because I think one thing that stands out when you see the Tyler Hoechlin suit, while it's fine, it's a fine suit, I suppose. The problem with it is, if I have a problem with it, is that it is a little dark. It's kind of leaning into that sort of New 52 era motif of the costume needs to be dark. Or even the 2000 X-Men movie, kind of everything needs to be dark.
His suit also matches the general hue of the Supergirl suit.
That's true.
I think, which was more the intention.
Yes, that's true. And which, again, is of that same kind of – it just stands out when they're side by side that this Kingdom Come costume, it just pops off the screen. And to me, that's what Superman should look like. He should pop off the screen. And I'm just blown away by it. And that's no knock on Tyler Hoechlin. I like him. I talked about last year in the crossover. I think he's a really good Superman. But this costume, primo work from Berlanti and company in getting this suit together. I can't wait to see Tom Welling in suit. I'm hoping we're going to get that by the end of this week. So I'm just pumped, man. This is an outstanding job of making him as somebody put this on Twitter, he looks like he walked off of an Alex Ross painting in this costume.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly done.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, one other item, late breaking news today. As we record this,
We got two more items, but
no, I said one last late breaking item. I know that we have two more items left, Nick. Just have some patience.
Let it play out and see where it goes.
Exactly. Ava DuVernay, director, writer, etc., is directing a TV adaptation of the DC Vertigo book DMZ by Brian Wood and Riccardo Bertelli for the upcoming HBO Max streaming service. Nick, do you know anything about DMZ?
Yeah, it's very little, but it's essentially a visualization of what a modern Civil War would look like.
Yes,
the fallout from it.
I have read the first two volumes of DMZ, and I have a controversial opinion about DMZ.
Yes, continue.
I thought it sucked. For a book that is so critically regarded, critically well regarded, I should say, I found it boring. I found it largely uninteresting. None of the characters stuck with me. I thought the art was kind of muddied at times. And I know that there are people that love it. Our good buddy Steve Willey is a huge fan of this book. But for me, it just didn't land, and so I can't say I'm terribly excited about this project, but it's always good to see Vertigo properties adapted.
Having not read the book, but just knowing the premise, And knowing the work of Ava DuVernay in recent months, most notably When They See Us, which is a now Emmy award-winning television miniseries focusing on the case of the Central Park Five, and understanding the political climate of where we are in the country today, I think there is a very real possibility that this could be something of a loose adaptation, and that Ava DuVernay could use the foundation laid by the premise to tell something – to tell a story that is very relevant and very affecting in today's time. So I'm excited for this, even though I've not read a word of the book.
Yeah, I can't say I'm excited about it, but I am happy that it exists because I think it's important to adapt these Vertigo titles, and it's always fun to see it. And like you said, I do think that there is room to improve the source material here, as we see with some adaptations. So cautiously optimistic. But speaking of cautiously optimistic, let's bring it home with the release today of the full-length trailer, I guess you would say. This is the first full-length trailer, right?
Yeah, they've done a brief teaser, and they've done that little, like, the It parody they did, you know, where it was her walking towards the camera with the balloons and everything. Right. But in terms of footage of most of these characters, yeah, not... this is the first.
The movie is Birds of Prey, the fantabulous the fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn. Yes. Again, first time that we have what is this? The first time that we have seen this full length trailer, and I came out of it cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably how I feel about it as well. I don't think I liked the trailer a great deal, but it showed me enough of like, okay, this is the tone of the movie, and this is what it's allegedly going to be, you know?
In the same way, yeah.
There were bits in the trailer that fell flat for me. There were bits in the trailer that were funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like you. I'm cautiously optimistic. I think this could wind up working.
Yeah, it certainly has the flavor of a modern Harley Quinn comic book. Very zany, very all over the place. Looks like we're going to get musical numbers. So I'm good with that. I think that part, that stuff looks good. It certainly, and by the way, it definitely feels like a Harley Quinn movie more than it does a Birds of Prey movie based on the trailer.
Yeah, was Huntress even, like, I kept trying to get a glimpse of Huntress.
Huntress is in the trailer. Like they didn't she aims a crossbow at some guy.
Right, but they showed a good bit of Black Canary, but very little Huntress, so I was disappointed by that.
I continue to be, shall we say, less optimistic about Rosie Perez as...
I knew you were going to go
as
there.
As Renee Montoya, but we'll see. I'll give her a shot. One thing that I have no doubts about after watching this trailer is that Ewan McGregor is going to kill as Black Mask.
Do you think we'll actually get him in the mask?
I think so, yeah. I think they're not going to reveal that in the trailer yet, though. And they shouldn't. Let people experience it in the movie. But I will say I think that he's going to kill it, and it appears that he's taking cues from Judd Winnick's Batman run in terms of his version of Black Mask. And I think you would agree, Nick, that that's probably the best version of Black Mask.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt whatsoever. Yeah, I'm excited about that as well. We'll see how it – but we got a few months left to go, and I'm sure more will be revealed as we traverse the road to this movie's release.
Indeed so. Well, that's it for the rundown. And as has become the norm, we have nothing for reading and watching this week. At least I don't, Nick. Do you?
No. Nope.
Nothing at all. Sad day. But don't worry. Our stories are coming back soon, folks. We'll have plenty of thoughts for you on Arrow, on The Flash, on Legends of Tomorrow, on Supergirl, on Black Lightning, and on Batwoman.
My God. How are we going to find the time?
Oh, God, I don't know if we can. Because our time is already being sapped, because this is the biggest week in wrestling in quite some time, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
But not all of us have to like it, Greg.
That's right. We don't all have to like it. But it's the biggest week in wrestling in many years. And what better time than to bust out the wrestling minute and a half?
Well, it's interesting because we again sit here and have we record this show on a date where we don't really have the bulk of the week. You know, we really only have Raw to react to. Of course, we're looking forward to the debut of AEW. Of course, we're looking forward to the first 2-hour NXT on the USA Network. Of course, we're looking forward to The Rock returning to Friday Night SmackDown for the Fox debut, the Brock Lesnar Kofi Kingston title match. But all of these things are in the future. We can't really break those down just yet. But Raw, I thought, was a pretty good episode. Momentous, if nothing else. New set, shake up of the commentary team, shake up of the aesthetic of the show. Liked all that and had more good segments than bad, I would say.
I would agree. I thought I thought there was some really good stuff. AJ and Cedric had a great match, I thought, which apparently you're not supposed to think. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening. Nick, what would be your thoughts if Bobby Lashley made out with your wife right in front of you? Would you just stand there?
Oh, I have no choice.
Well, good point. What if you were Rusev, though? Would you just stand there?
No, I would go fight. I would go fight for my rights. I would fight for my life, in fact.
Yes. But nonetheless, the Fiend continues to impress. And I love their viral marketing with him. I saw it on Fox NFL Sunday with some of their ads. With the Fiend popping in at the last second was really cool. But let me ask you this, Nick. And this is what I've been wanting to ask you about on the Wrestling Minute all week.
Mm-hmm.
Folks may not know this if they're not real friends of ours and they only know us through the show. Nick is a huge CM Punk fan. And with all the various reports that have come out, with all the various hints, allegations, and rumor and innuendo, I want to get it straight from you as a CM Punk aficionado. Is CM Punk coming back to wrestling? Is he coming back to wrestling soon? And where is he coming back?
I have no idea. I have no idea. He is notoriously a very guarded individual. The reporting would have you believe that if he's going to come back, he's going to come back to WWE, which makes some level of sense because money is undoubtedly probably higher in WWE, although I still wonder if it's all not a giant smokescreen to set up an AEW debut. I don't know, but I think he is going to come back. I think within the next calendar year, you'll see him back in a wrestling ring somewhere. I don't know where yet, and I'm just hopeful that if and when he comes back, he comes back re-energized and actually has his heart into it and isn't just doing it for the money. Because a CM Punk who is unmotivated by his actual work, we've seen that before, and we know what kind of mental state that can lead him into. And if that's what we're going to get, I'd rather he just stay away.
Yep. We'll have to see. It's going to be very interesting. Some think he may show up this Friday on Fox. I don't know. I don't believe that necessarily, but we'll have to see how it all plays out. But I'm excited, Nick. I know you're excited, too. As a wrestling fan, the enormity of this week can't be overstated. By the time this show comes out to the airwaves, we'll know whether all these shows delivered or not. I certainly hope they do. In particular, the two that have to deliver are AEW on TNT and SmackDown on Fox. Those shows have to deliver. Hopefully they do.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's all we've got for the Wrestling Minute, unless you have something else, Nick.
I don't have anything else. So we'll move on and we will close the show, I think, as we have done for some time. And, you know, Greg, earlier in the show, we talked about the Spider-Man Marvel deal, how that all came back together between Sony and Marvel. And, you know, you could say that's something of a bidding war. It was a little bit of a public negotiation. I would liken it to a bidding war, and it reminded me of a little song about a bidding war. And so I figured, why not get WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross to give us a little rendition of this particular song about bidding? Jim, take it away.
Well, folks, I went down to the King Kong Bundy County auction, where I saw something I just had to have. My mind told me I should proceed with caution, but my heart said, get your ass out there and make a bid on that. And I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I would give anything to make your ass mine, oh my. I will do your bidding, and I will be at your beg and call. Yes, I have never seen anyone looking so fine except Dr. Death. Man, I've got to have her. She is a one of a kind. I'm going once. I'm going twice. I'm sold to the lady in the second row. She's an 8. She's a 9. She's a perfect 10, I know. She's got ruby red lips, blonde hair, blue eyes. It's like Missy Hyatt. And I'm about to bid my heart goodbye. Well, you know, folks, the auctioneer was going about a mile a minute. He was talking too fast, too busy, three-man booth. I'm not a big fan of that. He was taking bids and calling the spots out loud. And I guess I was just really getting into it because I started shouting out above the crowd. You know what I said? It sounds pretty similar to what I said the last time. I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I'd give anything to make your ass mine, oh, mine. I'll do your bidding, and I'll be at your beck and call. You know, I've never seen anyone looking so fine. Man, I have got to have her. She is one of a kind. I'm going once, going twice. I'm sold to the lady in the long black dress because she won my heart. It was no contest. With her ruby red lips, blonde hair, blue eyes, well, I am about to bid my heart goodbye. Yeah, we found love on the auction block, and I hauled her ass away. And we still love and laugh about the way we met that day, when I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I'd give anything to make you mine, oh mine. I will do anything you ask me to do, for God's sake, and be at your beck and call, just like I was back in the Mid-South. Yeah, I've never seen anyone's ass looking so fine. Man, I have got to have her. She's a one of a kind. Going once, going twice, I'm sold to the lady in the second row. She's an 8, she's a 9, she's a 10, I know. She has ruby red lips, blonde hair, and blue eyes. And I am about to bid my ass goodbye.
Our traveling,